It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Folding Pocket.
It's time now for the Chipping Forecast, issued by Folding Pocket on behalf of Andrew Cotter, Eddie Pepperell, and special guest Ian Carter.
Hello and welcome to the Chipping Forecast, where all three of us are once more gathered on this Sceptre Isle. We are all in the UK again to talk about all things golf. I'm Andrew Cotter and His Excellency Ian Carter, our special guest, is here. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm all right. But more importantly, how is Eddie Pepperell? What can we say? Back from Japan. Now, I first knew something was wrong, something was amiss, when messages came in on social media from our listeners, from people saying, "I thought Eddie was supposed to be playing in Japan. Why is he not on the leaderboard?" We didn't know about it. So, and I don't like to bother Eddie when he's in the golf tournament environment. So, Eddie, tell us about your trip, for it is a sad tale. Actually, because it is, do you remember, again, you're possibly too young, do you remember our tune on Radio 1 with Simon Bates?
No, I'm afraid not.
Okay, well, you just tell the story. Hang on a second. Eddie, what happened to you in Japan?
Well, Andrew, I travelled a long way, but not much reward. And it was an expensive trip for very little in return.
Tom, I'm going to stop that. That's just off-putting. Go on, sorry.
No, I had a bad back. I suffered a bit of an injury at home, actually, the Friday before travelling, and I thought I would travel anyway and hope that it would get better, but unfortunately it got a lot worse. So, I figured not to push it and withdrew the Thursday morning.
Is this the back? Because I remember when we did our chat in China back in the day on a podcast, and you had a back injury, and that was quite cataclysmic. It went, and is it the same sort of upper back area?
No, it's lower back. So it is the same type of thing. That was kind of why I didn't want to push it, because as you say, in 2018, that was quite significant. So I've had disc issues ever since 2015, actually, where I had a similar injury. I had a scan yesterday. I kind of know what to expect. It's not going to be an overly pretty picture down there, but for me, it's always just a case of managing it, which I generally have kind of been doing well, but obviously didn't. And I think maybe some excessive power washing, some homework at home, clearing a skip out, just didn't probably help myself a week before Japan, and also tried to hit the ball a little bit harder. And I think confluence of factors came together, and my back didn't like that very much.
So percentage-wise, DIY, wear and tear of being a professional golfer and trying to get more speed. So could you apportion the percentages for blame for this situation now?
Unfortunately as well, Ian, I think there's a bit of hereditary factors going in there as well. As per the scans, I've definitely got some degeneration going on with my hips and discs. So there's a few things that go on with me. So I wouldn't be able to apportion it equally, I'm not sure, but it's one of those things. I'll get through this year for sure. I might look at something a bit more extensive come the end of the year. Yeah, and there we go. And then Bilbo returned with the ring that he stole from Gollum.
Oh, not always ended up with them. And they separated, and it was very sad. Or somebody died, and then Simon Bates in his cheery voice would say, "But this is for you, here's Kajagoogoo." That is a slight concern, but all golfers have back issues to a certain extent, don't they? So it's just, I know you say you've got the sort of hereditary degeneration as well, but oh God, we're bringing you down here, listeners. But it's not, it sounds more serious than it is. I suppose your thing is, though, when you're having to pull out of tournaments, it must give you a little bit of pause for thought.
Yeah, I think the frustrating thing for me, I don't mind dealing with some pain. You know, I've had pain on and off for years throughout my career. But for me, it's the stiffness and the tightness of my lower back that really gets me down, because that has such a material impact on my golf swing. And actually, as I look at my swing through time, that's the thing that's probably could characterize it more than anything is just a range of motion, a loss of range of motion. And as we've talked about before, I'm a huge believer that longevity in the game relates a lot to range of motion. So for me, I would like to explore maybe potential things I could do potentially to improve that. Obviously, there's things I can do on a day-to-day basis, but I think there is also some stuff physiologically going on with me that maybe hinders that.
Yeah, we talked about this because I got my hip range measured and it's tiny. So, and that brings about problems. And some people just have limited range of motion in their hips, and you might be similar in that respect. The only thing that gives you fuller range of motion in your hips if you've got limited range is having a hip replacement. So if you have a double hip replacement, you'll suddenly have full range of motion. Like, well, Tom Watson, you know, look at him go at Tunbury.
Yeah, my dad's had a hip replacement. My hips aren't too bad, although I've got Perthes disease in my left hip. My right hip is tight, but that's not got anything, there's not anything structurally wrong. But it's things like arthritis and stuff like that is in my family, which, listen, if that's what is maybe happening with my hips and facet joints as per the scans and a bit of disc degeneration, whatever, that it is what it is. I can work around it, but, and of course you can do other things like improve thoracic mobility and strength and whatnot. But
does this... So what I'm trying to glean from this, Eddie, is that as a professional golfer right now, one, you're facing the prospect of trying to get better and the physio and all of the therapies that will be involved there. But is there also a feeling that actually I'm going to have to re-examine how I swing a golf club as well?
So I think my biomechanics are occasionally poor and don't help my back for sure. That being said, some of those biomechanics will be driven by the body. You know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, really. So I'm sure there's things I could do to help me. And of course, if you look at the older swings, you know, when generally there was less separation between the hips and upper spine, then yeah, that would probably expect to see less back injuries in that. So I could maybe, but it's one of those, Ian. Yeah, I don't know how much to change or really what to do too much on it.
The other thing, and Andrew, I mean, you know, we were texting each other saying he's not playing. What's going on? But I just, you sound very matter of fact and accepting of what happened last week. But and we've touched on this in the past before, but I think it speaks to actually what a tough life it is to be a touring pro, that you've flown halfway around the world to a far off land to go and do something, presumably with, I know you don't get excited, Eddie, but with a sense of anticipation that you're restarting your season, and then the rug is just pulled from under you. It must be, I mean, that is a long bloody journey back, isn't it? You know, in those circumstances.
Yeah, and to rub salt in the wound, I was 13 kilos over with Japan Airlines and they charged me £519.
Oh my God.
So you personally or your luggage?
Well, yeah. So that just rubs salt into the wound. But hey, you know, listen, that's the life of a professional golfer.
It is the chipping forecast curse. Tour players who appear in the chipping forecast. Ollie Wilson broke his toe, dropping his wife's water bottle onto it. See, that's the peril of working out barefoot, as he stresses that he does. Eddie Pepperell's back went while making a flat white. Matt Wallace, was he? He was nursing a shoulder injury, wasn't he, when he was chatting to us?
He told us he was going to pull out of that trophy defence, didn't he?
Oh, what? Laurie Cantrell be walking down the street, a piano will fall on him or something.
Well, Laurie's got a bad back because of the size of his wallet.
Yeah.
Laurie was ill in Miami.
Oh my goodness. So Richard Osman, we should check on Richard Osman.
Have we got a guest today to...
Got a guest today, so he's not going to be coming on anymore, but we've got Dominic Holland coming on, who is... Oh, he loves his golf. Anyway, he's going to come on later on. We are going to go through all our usual shenanigans. Actually, we'll just start in Japan. So you missed out on the ISPS Handa Championship. Good tournament, won by Yuto Katsuragawa. Third Japanese winner on the DP World Tour this season. So you had Rikuyo Hoshino in Qatar, you had Keita Nakajima in India, and now Katsuragawa in Japan, won by a shot from Sebastian Sodeberi. Got the old samurai costume for the winner as well. It's a bit of an odd... The guy that we were talking about last year, Mr. Handa.
Last week, you mean?
Last week, what did I say? Last week, last year, we were talking... No, I was sorry, I was saying, because I was talking to Eddie about him last year at a party that you weren't invited to. But yeah, we were talking about him last week on a pod as well. Yeah, he's an odd fish. I saw a video where he was dancing as a sort of chicken, surprising Mike Tindall and Richie McCaw, who were making some content video. And then I saw someone forwarded me a video from the players' party which had sort of pole dancers. Everyone looked suitably embarrassed by it. But,
I saw that one as well. There was a player that was just sitting there very near the pole who just started looking at his phone.
I know, he's going, what am I doing here? Anyway, so I love Japan because there are some sort of eccentricities to Japan, some endearing eccentricities. And I don't know, this tournament seemed to have... Did you, in your brief time there, did you see get any of that vibe, Eddie?
No, I did see the video. I wasn't at the players' party, actually, but I had a friend who was, and he sent me that video, and yeah. There was, I suspect, a few players saying to their wives, I'll be back shortly. Yeah, strange fella. I've heard many stories about Dr. Handa, as you say. So, but obviously a great supporter of the tour and of golf. So one of those.
Well, yeah. And as we touched upon last week, Ian, you know, because we were able to chat about the sort of work in blind golf, etc. And you got a good response from that as well. Because I know you do lots of good work in that area. As well, so
you know, from our conversation last week, at least one person has volunteered to become a guide with the England and Wales golf and stuff like that. So it is a really good thing.
Yes, it is indeed. So that was that tournament there, he said, wrapping that one up. But of the weekend's tournaments, this was a weekend where, in terms of men's pro golf, Liv had had the chance for a good run at it, because the Zurich Classic's not that strong. The ISPS Handa is a decent championship, but it's not good. So Liv Golf in Adelaide had a real chance to assert itself, because this tournament has established itself as one of the more boisterous on the Live circuit, one of the best supported on the Live circuit. And it got this reputation as being well attended and lively. It was both those things. American Brendan Steele won the individual event down there. $4 million for Brendan Steele. Guess Brendan Steele's current ranking at the moment. Here we go. Here's a popular game. Guess a Live golfer's ranking.
972.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to go lower. 1,104.
No, he's not that low. He's 659th. So Brendan Steele, 41 years old. In terms of majors, he had won ninth place in the 2022 USPGA. He has won on the PGA Tour before, but Brendan Steele, that's not the high-profile winner they were looking for. But in the team event, which is what they always stress, they had the Australian team, they are the Rippers, against the South African team, the Stingers. But, so, I didn't watch it on YouTube or, you know, on its channel, but I did see clips. And Ian, the clip that was doing the rounds, and it's quite rightly doing the rounds and getting a lot of views, was the one where Dean Burmester of the Stingers is playing. I think was that on the second hole of the playoff? And you know, it's just a sort of abuse that he's getting. And he's, so I've got to say it, because you know, this is me quoting. So I'm sorry. So Dean Burmester's over a sort of short pitch into the green in the playoff, and fans are calling out before his shot as he gets over the ball. He tells them, clear his leg in the broadcast too, and I quote, I apologise, Jordan, shut the fuck up. And it's this is sort of presented as being this great vibe, this, oh, it's different, it's loud, it's... Well, what do you make of it?
That's the thing, Andrew, isn't it? It is presented, I feel like that Adelaide tournament is Liv's spiritual home. Obviously, the chief executive is Greg Norman of Australia. He makes a big thing politically of taking his tour to Australia, because the PGA Tour doesn't go there. It's all part of the global footprint. It is golf, but louder. So that kind of behaviour is that rowdiness is encouraged, and it is rewarded by big crowds. What was it, 94,000 over the 3 days? A younger dynamic to the crowd. It's not for me, Clive. I mean, it's, you know, I just find it very, very... It's not what I enjoy about golf, but maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe when you're seeing a player taking a backswing and you've got the crowd going whoa and being partisan and
when he was in the bunker, yeah, over his bunker shot, and they're actually trying to put him off.
But I'm driving up to Preston North End today to watch Leicester City, and I'll be yelling that and having a great time, that sort of thing, when, well, I won't be personally, but I'll be among people who will, you know, is that how sports should be played? Is that the environment? Maybe we're the stick in the muds. I don't know. It's not for me, as I say. And I think that the way golf is played traditionally is a far more edifying experience. But they turned up and they enjoyed it. So I don't want to be that person who goes, oh, this is disgraceful. But equally, it's not my taste.
Eddie, you're the guy who would be standing over a shot if you're in a tournament, and would you be Burmistering it and giving them back something, saying, come on, fellas?
I don't know that I'd have the courage to tell someone to shut the F up on the golf course, but I would certainly be thinking it. To Ian's point, I mean, ironically for Liv, the team event probably helped it. The team element helped that event this week. Brendan Steele isn't, like you say, a big name winner, but actually it was the team side of things that created that whole thing on the 18th there. And so ironically for Liv this time around, the team element clearly added to it. I think that, but I'm with Ian, of course, and I suspect yourself, Andrew, and that I find it quite unpalatable generally. I don't think that it's a direction that golf necessarily needs to go in. And of course, when you have a player in contention telling the crowd to shut the fuck up, I mean, I don't see how that is positive on balance. So although 95,000 people showing up is a great thing, I don't, back again to your point, that is going to be its highlight event of the year, and I don't think they should expect anything close to that everywhere else they go.
I showed that clip to my now 23-year-old son last night and said, just tell me what you think. And he was kind of, well, don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
So,
well,
he's
yeah.
a hooligan.
Yeah, he is, actually. He's got major issues. So, I don't know. I mean, you might say, look, it's different, it's not for everyone. You don't have to watch it if you don't like it. But nothing happens in isolation, and that kind of thing percolates through golf and feeds other people. And you know, you're talking about all the youngsters being there, and isn't that great? Well, that's what they're seeing, and so that behaviour is the example they're being set. So they think, this is a fine way to behave, an acceptable way to behave. And I'm not just talking about golf here, but about life. And maybe you do sound a little bit older and stuck in your ways, but that, you know, boorish, obnoxious behaviour, which they market as colourful and lively and vibrant, that's, you know, that this is just a fine way, and it adds volume, and it's loud, and it's exciting, and it, you know, it doesn't matter which positive adjectives you spin it with. It's just people being clowns.
But what about the watering hole where they're chucking the beer cans on, and was it Lucas Herbert's caddy Nick Pugh got brained by a full can of beer?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, listen, we and it's not just
on, it?
You know, it's no, it's not. Of course, it's not, and it's not just Liv. It happens at Phoenix as well with that kind of behaviour, but. So I think there's a difference between people are confusing we can have loud, exciting atmosphere and this can be just really the music pumping, etc. But when, you know, you're getting someone actually shouting out, trying to put someone off over a shot as they were there, no, that's not. I think they're you can have a great atmosphere and a different kind of atmosphere to traditional golf without it being this awful thing that, you know, it just, I don't know, and you're right, I don't want to appear this old kind of funny, but you were talking about it, Ian. One of the things I like about golf is that, you know, you were talking about that youngster you saw at a club who's stopping just because, stopping out of respect for somebody playing a shot, and, you know, just wanted to be quiet for them. And again, there are different ways of doing things within golf, but it's not that. It's just kind of drunken idiots just shouting out. But also, when you're trying to put a player off over a shot, get out of here. What are we doing? Why are we accepting this? This is nonsense. And accepting it because it's different. Well, I mean, you know, if a spectator was coming out and slapping a player in the face as he hits a shot, oh, come on, that's different. Hey, it's vibrant, it's exciting. Did it well.
Quickly, one more thing, though, Andrew, as well, is I thought what was interesting is this was South Africans and Australians. And it kind of...
oh, God,
no,
here
but
he
I mean, Stinger versus Rippers. And my point is there is that Liv, you know, by their good fortune this week, have stumbled across something that there is that tribal nature already built in due to the nationality. And so that is the opportunity for Liv moving forward, is to somehow find a way to make this as much about nationalities, because there is inherently more organic feeling within that than just Cliques versus Rippers or Majestics versus Four Aces, because that's just pure nonsense, and that's never going to invigorate people genuinely, I don't think. So there is an opportunity here for Liv, but whether it can actually build on that, it's going to be interesting to see.
That's the point I was going to make, though, that what they got there, and whether they've discovered it by default or not, but they actually got the team vibe and connected with people. Now, that was probably two steps the wrong side of the line that the European crowds moved very close to in Rome last year, and the American crowds got very close to at Whistling Straits 2 years earlier at the Ryder Cup, and may well go marching straight through that line at Bethpage next time. So I think there is definitely an issue in terms of policing behaviour and having acceptable behaviour. But if you can marry the sport with the tribal passions, we know that is a fantastic combination for golf to put it and make it as attractive as it possibly can be. So maybe they're onto something.
No, I totally agree with that. And Eddie's absolutely right. If you get Australia against South Africa, which those two teams were in Australia, then obviously you're going to get... But they can have that. You can have that sort of Ryder Cup passion whereby it is... And you see it's, you know, an opponent's ball go into a bunker, and we heard it, you know, over in Italy that will be cheered, and you think that's not on Bobby Jones, but that's just inevitable. That's going to be happening. And I don't so much have a problem. I do have a bit of a problem with that, but you've got to accept that it's going to happen. But what you don't accept that's going to happen is people, you know, actually, as he goes ahead, going, whoa, trying to put somebody off as they're hitting. Come on. I mean, come on. Come on, guys. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Padraig Harrington always says, he says, the problem, he said, if the crowd is rowdy and noisy consistently, then that's fine. Where you have the problem is when you're supposedly having silence and then someone yells out and that puts you off. So I don't think necessarily Burmester was necessarily put off by the whoa as he hit the backswing for that shot that went through the green into the bunker, because that was the environment that he was playing in. But if it had just been a lone voice amid silence, that would have been much more off-putting.
I don't see any hope for it in the long run, because the team element is so incongruous with the nature of professional golf, in that you're an individual, you're in solitude, and it's about doing something better. And as we can see, I think it's becoming increasingly apparent to some degree with Liv, the team element somehow reduces that. And I think golf is always going to have that built into it. It's very different to a team sport. It's always going to be different to a team sport. And I just think that, it won't work in the long run.
This is Dismas Indiza. I'm listening for Chipping Focus. Good friend, Eric Papel.
Dominic Holland has joined us. He's a bit of a silhouette. He's not very well lit, but we don't actually film the podcast anymore to put out much clips. So, no, exactly. Let's find out. It's all about audio quality. So, oh, he's disappeared entirely now. Oh my God. I knew you'd have a good microphone set up. So I've got to give you a proper introduction here. I had that we were going to chat about a lot of other things, and then you were going to appear seamlessly at just the right point. But because we've ranted so long about about Liv Adelaide, we've still got lots of other things to do, but you can just join in on them. So I think on the Chipping Forecast, we have a sort of book, unofficial book club going, largely driven by Ian and his book, his autobiography, Lester, Love and Me. I don't know what it is. Sorry, no, his book, which is excellent, Golf Wars. Richard Osman appeared. He was struggling, actually, with his books until he appeared in our podcast, and then he sold a few since then. So he's doing well now. But Dominic Holland, what do you prefer to be called? Because I mentioned to you, I paid good money to go and see you at the Edinburgh Festival in the 1990s as a comedian. You're in all sorts of... you're never off panel shows either. You're just... There's Dominic Holland again popping up, and Have I Got News For You. How do you bill yourself?
Stand-up comedy. Yes. Although it's been a while, Andrew. Well, a good bloke will do. Yeah, I suppose a stand-up comedian, if you look at my income over the years, definitely stand-up comedy has been my mainstay, but certainly writing is where I'm happiest, I think, and I enjoy it more because it's less nerve-wracking.
Yeah, and golf nut as well.
Absolute golf nut, yeah. I'm a huge golf fan, watching the game, playing it badly, but, you know, continually striving.
Mm. And so, you have many, many books on the go, but Open Links is the one which is obviously got the golf connection. And I should stress as well that profits from Open Links, which is this a sort of re-release or a new, what's it, it's this week, is it?
It's this week, Andrew, yeah. It was included very kindly by Golf Monthly in a sort of digest of the best golf novels published. And very kindly, they include Open Links. And I was so flattered by that. I thought, well, that's a great opportunity for me to rekindle this story, because I think it's a story which will resonate. And it's a re-release. It's about a decade since I've put it out originally, and I've changed some of the stuff. I've left a lot of the Ian Carter makes a very welcome a welcome presence. I think yourself is in there as well, Andrew. Mm. So, it's because of that Golf Monthly column that encouraged me to do it again.
I have to say, Dominic, I love the way in the book that you do use the especially the BBC Five Live commentary as a kind of thread to describe the action, which is obviously a fictional account of an Open Championship. But that's really, really good, isn't it? I think to actually acknowledge the Five Live.
Yes.
Five Live, you know, part of the golfing broadcasting firmament.
And also in the book, Ian, I've left it as BBC coverage as well, as in terrestrial coverage, which I lament that it ever passed on.
Those were the days.
I mean, I have all the requirements now to watch the golf on telly, watch the golf last night. But the book almost now is an homage to how it used to be. And I certainly love watching the Open on BBC, it's advert-free broadcast, and Five Live. I mean, I remember driving back from gigs, listening to the Ryder Cup and yourself and your colleagues and Andrew, and love those commentaries and enjoy them immensely.
Can I ask quickly, Andrew, why do you think, Dominic, you have such a love for golf, and why do you think that so many other athletes or very professional, successful people also tend to fall in love with golf? What do you think it is about it?
Probably because it's so enticing, Eddie, and we are all afforded some brilliance in our average rounds, which is really what the kernel of Open Links is. So I'm so pleased you're here, Eddie. I was told by Andrew you might not make it. We're so admiring of guys who can do what we strive to, and because the game allows us some peerless shots. I mean, if I was playing you know this week in London, you're going to give me 10 nine shots.
But, not this week, actually. I think you might succeed against them this week. So.
But it's the fact that in my round of golf, I will hit a couple of shots, possibly as good as yourself, Eddie, or even better. I might get closer than you. But clearly, over the round, I'm not going to be able to keep that up. And that's what keeps people coming back to the course, is because the game is so enticing. And, you know, I mean, I played in the Pro-Am at Wentworth, and my little boy, Sam, put a ball well within John Rahm's 8-iron. John probably held the putt, Sam probably missed. But I always think, gosh, wouldn't it be a great story if those enormously exciting shots were to accumulate? And that's what really is the kernel of Open Links. And another thing about golf, Eddie, is that we can play where you guys play. I played the Brabazon last week with some mates. You know, that's where the Ryder Cup played out. We all love watching Seve smash his first tee shot onto that 10th hole. We can play that hole, you know, and you can't do that in many sports. You can't play the Crucible, you can't play Wimbledon, you can't play at Wembley. But in golf, it's a very accessible game. And the Open particularly, because you'll know, and I know, I've got amateur mates who've tried to qualify for the Open. Some of them have made it and played in the Open, missed the cut. But, you know, that makes it very, very an exciting thing to try and chase.
Yeah, it's almost like there's such a wide array of possibilities that a bit like a fictional book, your imagination can just run with it, with the facts, and that just adds so much more to the experience of being a golfer, I suppose.
Dom, you mentioned one of your sons. You have many, many sons. How many is it? Four, three, four, five?
I have four,
six.
Four sons.
Four.
Andrew.
Do they all play? Because, I mean,
you are a
well-known man in your own right, but my goodness me, you now have children who have 20, 12, billion followers on everything. I mean, Tom has the bulk of that. I had to introduce him at Wentworth. I didn't know, because I'm not really up with popular culture,
right,
and I didn't know who he was, so I had to look him up, and I said, oh, he's Dominic Holland's son, is that why he's here? And I didn't realize he'd been Spider-Man or something.
I'm glad you didn't introduce him to the Wentworth crowd as Dominic Holland's son. That would not have played well.
Well, I suddenly, but there was suddenly this, the demographic of the fans walking around the course changed, yeah, and up around the first tee, mm-hmm, all these youngsters suddenly appear, and I was going, what are these young kiddies doing here? And and they were just going, so my point is that with Tom, and Harry's got about a million followers on Instagram, mm-hmm, as well, so, yes, you know, Tom's got 65 million, you know, they can actually, you know, because they do occasionally post about golf. You know, yeah, it's just, it changes the sort of appearance, perhaps, of the sport.
Well, yeah, it certainly does. Tom is definitely, you know, they have him in the crosshairs because of who he is. The fact that he plays quite nice golf, he's off four, so, and he can get around and play with guys. He gives guys a good game. But no, he definitely brings a younger demographic, and golf is always trying to shed itself of that fuddy-duddy, you know, middle-class, middle-age sport, which I don't think it is. And I think golf is an incredibly accessible game. Tom and all the boys, I mean, you know, people say to me, gosh, you know, you're an author, you know, your son's who he is and they've got his following. But let me tell you guys, I'm more excited to be on the Chipping Forecast than be on Tom's Instagram, because obviously his audience, you know, is the demographic, is young women and young girls who probably aren't as interested in golf as we are, you know.
So I was speaking to Padre Hound last week. I was working with him up at Troon, and he said, told a story about The Edge from U2. Mm-hmm. He said, The Edge, I'm not going to call him The Edge. His name's Dave. Dave Evans. He's really into golf. He likes golf.
Uh-huh.
But he can't publicly admit it because... Yes. Of the image of it. Like, he was getting lessons from somebody in Ireland, and the guy then saw him in a bar at some point and went over to talk about golf, and The Edge, Dave, says, sorry, do I know you? In front of all his friends, because he couldn't admit, wow, that he was part of the golf scene. So it's got that... This is why Tom just has to post... Every single post should be about what he's working on his game.
The adverts for the pro-am, they're not fools, they know that he has a great metric, you know. The Edge, or Dave, let's call him, you know this vaunted guitarist with his millions in the bank, it's very humbling when he gets on that first tee. He's played in front of 200,000 people at some massive rock concert in America, and then he's wobbling with a 3-wood in his hand, and that's what golf does to you. And it comes out in the middle brilliant, you feel like a god. And you dribble it past the red tees, and you know, your world implodes.
I think it's very possible that Dave just didn't want to be associated with Podrick.
He is quite an intimidating guy, Podrick, isn't he? He's very intense.
He's not. There is an intensity about his eyes, but behind it, it's just he. I had a lesson from him. Well, I had a lesson because, you know, he does this. Oh, he's trying to get his YouTube channel going. Well, it's very successful already, but. At every opportunity, it's so Paddy's Golf Tips. And so he's, I don't think Podrick, 3-time major champion, wants to be a golf influencer for some reason, but as well. But he does, he's, so Eddie, you've talked about his knowledge of the swing, Podrick. So he was giving this clinic, and it was, every single thing was a gem, but there was so much going on. But I was mentioning how I was struggling with golf and life in general. He said, send me your swing just now. So I just WhatsApped it to him, and he sent it to Noel Fox, who played Walker Cup. So he works a bit with Noel Fox, who is a really, really good coach. And he says, so he then sent it to Noel Fox and basically said, yeah, pretty swing, but just stores nothing. So he said, so he gave me this tip over, and I took it out onto the course, and lo and behold, I was cranking it up. I mean, honestly, it was good. It was, oh, so.
But has it continued there? Because I always find little improvements often just recede. You know, you'll revert to type.
We'll find out today when I go out and hit some shots. So, yeah, yesterday was good. The day before was good. But you're right. No, you eventually go back to what your body does.
Yeah. Well, I've got a new nickname for you, Andrew, then. You stole nothing. I'm going to call you the wind turbine. That's your new nickname in the golfing parlance.
I missed that.
No, in terms of not storing any power. I think Podrick, listen, I absolutely love Podrick. I love spending time with him. I think his Paddy's Tips videos are incredible. Like you say, how often, I mean, you just don't see that in many other sports, do you? Somebody who's still relevant, current, but also had the success he's had, pass on that level of knowledge. And it's a bit akin to Phil Mickelson, actually. I think those two are very similar in their readiness to give out their knowledge. It's pretty impressive.
It's interesting what you just said there, Andrew. When you said three-time major champion, I think Podrick Harrington doesn't get that kudos that he warrants. You know, I mean, McIlroy's won four, Podrick's won three, Faldo won six. I mean, that's an extraordinary tally for a man who, I mean, I think his captaincy of the Ryder Cup was very difficult for him, you know, abroad, not easy. But his playing was peerless. I mean, absolutely brave as a lion.
It was, but he talks about it as well, that he had that period, 2007, 2008, you win three majors. Mm. And we've talked about it in this podcast before, how many players, great players, multiple major winners, do it over a very, very short burst of time, and then they can't quite find that magic in the bottle that has just brought them that for just that short period of time. They're outliers like Tiger, obviously. Like people who do it over a sustained period of time, and even Brooks Koepka might be a bit of an outlier with his five now. But actually, for a lot of players, there are a couple of seasons. Think about Marco Mira in 98, winning the Masters, the Open Championship. So it's there for you at some point. Sure. We've still got to have our time, Dom. That's the thing.
Do you see that kind of phenomena, Dominic, at all in creative industries, acting industry, writing industry, etc.?
Comedy, yeah. Well, you know what it is with me, Eddie, is it's about what Open Links is about. What fascinates me about people who are incredibly high performing is they can all do it. You know, you can shape a ball. I've been on golf clinics with pros who are shaping it either way, doing everything, you know, really mercurial players, great hands, but they can't do it when it really matters. And I think that's the, you know, the best stand-up comedians are the guys who have absolutely zero self-doubt. And most people in the arts and in life more generally are racked with insecurities. And, you know, there are guys, I was watching the golf last night from America, the playoff, two very illustrious players playing two guys I'd never heard of. But they're all extraordinary ball strikers. It's whether they can do it under those intense pressures. And I think that's what marks out the players who get into that winning circle, which is why I think, which is what I used to write this book, because, you know, the guys who qualify for the Open are brilliant ball strikers. What, you know, they can all do it if only they could get their heads together and correspond with their physical attributes, then great things can happen. And that's very enticing, but it's a sort of nebulous thing. It's how do you catch that confidence and channel it for when you need it. And that's really what marks out the people who are earning millions, multi-millions, and we all know their names, and guys who are brilliant, but we've never heard of them.
Dom, I think you're absolutely right, and we did see it last night, didn't we, with Chad Ramey and Martin Traynor shooting that 63, then having to sit in the clubhouse for the best part of 3 hours, and then suddenly produce their best stuff.
Very difficult.
With a title on the line that would mean a hell of a lot more to them than it would to McIlroy and Lowry, but they're up against McIlroy and Lowry, who are seasoned winners, and lo and behold, Ramey and Traynor fall apart in the first playoff hole. So,
and they really did, and I felt sorry for them how that played out, Ian. I felt that putt was a me putt. I said that to my son. That was a shocking putt.
I mean, it didn't go anywhere near the hole, did it? And, you know, and the shot before.
But here's the thing, I love seeing guys. I mean, Dale Whitnall winning last year, Dan Bradbury winning for the first time. That's one of my most exciting things in golf. I root for I want to see Richard Mansell win on the European Tour. And I love seeing rookies come through and debutant winners. But then, oddly, last night, I wanted McIlroy to win. I wanted Lowry to win. Probably a little bit of home bias there. But McIlroy to get his 25th, Lowry to get his first. And so I was interested that I wanted those guys, those very, very illustrious, wealthy golfers to still come through. And then they did.
I think the beauty of that, and I agree entirely, is that's why it's so important to have larger fields with golf, because within 150 players, you have 150 stories. And to your point, you are capable, like all of us really, of rooting for each player under different circumstances. Whereas obviously with shorter fields, that just does not exist, or it's likely to exist far less often.
Well, Eddie, look at Todd Hamilton, look at Ben Curtis. Mm. These guys I don't know what they're doing now. They don't need to do anything because they have that great plaudit, that great trophy on their cabinet, on their mantelpiece. But, you know, to win the Open Championship and then to fade away, is that golf is probably the only sport that can ever happen in, because you don't get a guy who wins Wimbledon and then disappears. Mm-hmm. You know, a lady doesn't win Wimbledon and well, you know, and that's what the essence of the difficulty of the game is. There are so many moving parts to a successful, especially for four rounds, which is why I think Liv is a nonsense, really, as a prospect to try and take over what we all watch every Sunday and enjoy from Thursday to Sunday. You'll see people have brilliant, you know, great rounds, make the cut, and then have a terrible third round. And you think, well, how can he be 63 one day and then 72 the next?
Yeah, Andrea Jaeger made the final, the women's final, Wimbledon.
You're a tennis nut as well, Andrew. So
no, she became a nun, actually.
Did she?
Yeah. So there we
are. You think she could keep winning then?
Good chat. Anyway, so there we are. We've done a bit of a Zurich Classic roundup as well, as we like to round up the events on the chipping forecast here.
He's obviously fed up of being in love.
There we are.
I mean, I'm on with a comedian and I just made a dreadful joke, so apologies, Dominic.
Actually, I didn't think that was a bad joke, actually. When you did that joke, I thought, actually, that's quite good, actually. That's
okay,
quite
long.
I wonder what kind of clubs and balls the Edge uses when he plays golf. Next time I see the Edge, Dave, in front of lots of music industry people, I'll say, Dave, let me tell you about Strixon. And he'll say, what? Sumitomo Rubber Industries. And I'll say, oh, you've just outed yourself as a chipping forecast listener, Dave, in front of all your cool friends. But I frequently mention that I've got Strixon irons in the bag, like Eddie. I'm also giving their golf balls a go. As you might imagine, within their range of balls, there are balls to suit every type and standard of player. I was on the website earlier, 12 types of golf ball. If you go to the website, put in your swing speed, be honest about it. There's sort of ranges there. And then a bit about whether you're looking for extra control, spin, distance, whatever. It'll take you to the best options. I'm a Z-Star guy. That's what I am. But Strixon have designed the new Q-Star Tour and Q-Star Tour Divide balls to give moderate swing speed golfers, Ian can't respond at this point, to give them a tour-level ball option that delivers maximum greenside spin, more distance and more control. To find your nearest stockist, go to their dealer locator at strixon.co.uk and combine it with the ideal Cleveland wedge for you. That perfect feel as you knife it through the back, or as a lot of Australians heckle you in the bunker. A lot of amateurs will be buying tour model wedges like the RTX6, which is a bladed wedge, when the rest of the bag is cavity-backed. It makes no sense. That's why Cleveland have a full range of wedges, including the CBX4, which is a cavity-backed wedge designed for Ian Carter, which should be better for you. They also have their Smart Sole range, which offers maximum forgiveness. Chip in with Cleveland Golf, let's see what they did there, by trading in any old wedge. This is quite a good idea, this. Trade in any old wedge and get £25 off a brand new Cleveland Golf wedge. They will either donate your traded wedge to charity or have it sustainably recycled, ensuring all wedges are in it for the long game, not just the short game. Terms and conditions apply. Again, to find your nearest Cleveland stockist, go to eu.dunlopsports.com/Cleveland-golf. And you could be like Strixon Tour player and winner last night, Shane Lowry.
Rory, just say hello, please.
Hello, please.
Shane Lowry, Strixon player. Foursomes as well last night. Foursomes is hell of a game, hard game.
Did I see them using the Strixon?
Yeah, they were alternating on the balls.
Were they?
So Rory was driving with Shane's ball, and that meant that Shane would then be able to play the approach shots using his own ball. That was the theory.
Okay.
So if you count it through, Rory drove on the par 5 extra hole and ultimately played the fifth shot, which was to knock the ball in. So you actually saw Rory win a tournament, not with a tailor-made.
Wow. Wowzers.
Mm. I just want to say something here, because although I can't be involved in any of the promotional stuff that Andrew gets involved in, that I did hear that slight in there. I just want to make the point that I was at Romford Golf Club last week, last Friday, had a very, very nice evening there, great many TCF listeners there. It was actually through TCF that they invited me to go over and play and have a nice evening. And
was it a nice evening? Was it?
It was excellent. It was a very, very nice, entertaining evening. But on the 18th, I hit a chip. And Simon, who I was playing with, turned around and he said, do you know what? Every single one of those chips you've nailed today. And I chipped it all the way around.
Very good.
In seeing as that corporate opportunity came via this podcast, which we're obviously a part of, is there any financial compensation coming my way? Because I could do with clawing back some of those 13 kilos.
I'll tell you what, Eddie Pepperell, you're quite desperate when you're asking for a green fee from Romford, mate.
Mm. Where do you play your golf, Dom?
Well, all over West London, really, Andrew. I play at Coombwood Golf Club, is my home club. I play at Richmond Golf Club, mm. a member of the Stage Golf Society. I
yes.
play at Royal Wimbledon. I've got some guys who play there. Wherever I can, I played at the Brabazon last week. Got absolutely broken by the Brabazon. 12 guys went out. All of us blobbed the 18th. We came off with a new understanding of just how vast the difference is between the guys who do it professionally and us lot. Because we're all absolutely exhausted. I suppose for Eddie, he's playing even longer courses around the world. I think the course in India was even longer than the Brabazon.
Yeah, that's why I was at home on the sofa that week.
What a good move.
Dom, I've got a question for you, Dominic. Yes. I'm hoping for an honest answer. Would you rather your son have been Spider-Man or Batman?
Good question, Eddie. Good question. I think Spider-Man, because he's just that little bit more lofty. But people do ask me, you know, if you, Nikki and I were...
So he's more like a 58 degree than a 56 degree?
He's whatever he's got in his bag, Ian. He's that mercurial.
Lofty.
He can do anything. Ian's he's like Sevi. Actually, I think
gag on loft.
Where people get found out, Tom and I, it's with a wedge. I think it's much easier thrashing a ball hard when you're an amateur. When you've got a finesse ball 60 yards, anything 70 yards in, I can go to pieces. I can give the hole away. Very, very generously.
Yeah. All right, we've got a lot still to get through here. So we didn't even get to talk about...
Andrew, can I just tell one quick story?
Yeah.
Because just to make you feel better about not knowing who Tom was. Because my son worked in a golf store on his very first day and he was told, right, just go out there and talk to the customers. So he went out and there was this sort of slim... looking, very good-looking chap there. And my son walked up to him and said, oh, can I help you with anything? He said, yeah, I need 24 of those balls. And so he got the balls, and then he started filling out the thing and said, do you have a loyalty program? And he said, yes, I do. He said, what's your name? He said, Holland. He said, okay, Holland. Which one here? Is it Tom? He said, what's your first name? He said, Tom. And utterly oblivious... my then 21-year-old.
He would probably quite like that, wouldn't he, Tom?
See, Tom would like that. Tom would enjoy that.
I know. He said, where'd you play?
Where'd you play? No, Tom would enjoy that because the opposite is obviously the photographs and the getting the staff out from the back office who want to see him and meet him. And it's very flattering, but it is also exhausting. I mean, I always say I'd rather be David Toms than Tiger Woods because David Toms has got shed loads of cash in the bank, but he's not being bothered at dinner.
Will you see what happened, and you've been, had a level of celebrity in your time, but when you see the level of celebrity that Tom has, would you envy, I think a lot of young people chase fame
yes.
and don't realise what fame, real fame actually is and how it affects your life.
Well, Eddie's question earlier about Batman and Spider-Man, Nikki and I, when we talk about Tom's life, and because Tom was never in a school play, Tom was never didn't go to Eton, he didn't go to a public school. He really has been an extraordinary advent and an accession into fame, and it's been really accelerated and very, very high now. And we talk about this, and would if we look back, would we want it to happen again? And it isn't a slam dunk for me, because there's lots to give up. And I think on balance, you say, yeah, Tom's life is remarkable and we take it and it's great and he manages it okay. But it isn't a slam dunk. I think there are elements of being very famous, which are very curtailing and it's to be managed. You know, it is not straightforward going out with Tom. You know, as Eddie will know, when you go out with, Rory McIlroy on a thing. It's a different experience than when you go out with Sam Bairstow. It's a different experience.
Well, I was stopped in London last week by somebody who recognised me while having a coffee in between trying on suits for the wedding. And he did say, "You are an inspiration to me." And I double took. I thought, "You've got to be fucking joking." But he was being sincere.
Well, that's lovely. I mean, that's very flattering. And that's a nice level of fame, Eddie, because it took you by surprise. However, if you're McIlroy, then he will be tired of hearing that, because he hears it obviously all the time, you know. But I'm not complaining. Tom's life is remarkable and it gives me opportunities. And, you know, obviously he's read Open Links and really enjoyed the book and has been very kind about it. And that's going to help me carry on me as a scribe, you know. But, you know, as I say, David Toms, Tiger Woods, I'd go Toms every day.
Well, and also Toms uses Cleveland wedges. So
does he?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good link there, Edward. Yeah.
Oh dear, I think we've taken up enough of your time, Dominic, on this morning. But we do thank you for joining us very much indeed. Where are you playing golf today?
I am playing golf tomorrow at Richmond Golf Club with my mate Jimmy McGee, who's a comedian. Nice bloke, plays pretty agricultural golf, but he's a good bloke, nice to be on the course with. And today I'm going up to visit my father-in-law, who's not well, in Coventry Hospital. So I'm taking my wife up there today, doing my duties as a dad and husband.
Oh, I hope that goes well. I went past Richmond Golf Club on the top deck of a bus yesterday, and I said to my family, I could actually play there. And they said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "If you join the Stage Golf Society, you can..." And they just laughed at the thought that I could possibly join the Stage.
Ian,
I
could have you in the Stage in a heartbeat, Ian. And I would introduce you, okay. I would propose you. You could be in playing that very course in a matter of weeks. In fact, a matter of days, I think. I don't think it's oversubscribed.
Let's do it.
No, it's going to happen.
Let's do it. Oh, that's very kind, Dom. Thank you very
much. Excellent. Thank you very much, Dominic. Open Links is... Remind me of the date. It's this week, isn't it?
It's this Wednesday, Andrew, and it's available around the world, in bookshops and online. Yeah. Thank you very much, guys.
Proceeds going to the Anthony Nolan Trust as well. Thanks, Dominic. Cheers.
Thanks, you guys. Cheers.
There we are, Dominic Holland. Now, I was full of braggadocio last week, made some foolish boast that I could play over 100 holes in a day. I still think I can. Anyway, how many holes can you play in a day? For Prostate Cancer UK is the big golf race. So I started to think about it and thought, if you do get out early on a June day or late May, you could have played two rounds by 9 o'clock. And then you've just got to play three rounds in the rest of the day. You've got a whole day to play three rounds and then stick on an extra 10 holes, and that's your 100 holes in a day. So I think that is possible, so I'm going to give that a bash at some point. But anyway, get golfing to save men's lives. I know they're hammering it home, but 1 in 8 men will get prostate cancer in the UK. The big golf race is raising money to help men affected by the disease. You can play as many holes as you want, as few holes as you want. You can get sponsored to play 3 holes in a day if you want, but we'd rather you played 36, 72 or 100 holes. Get sponsored to do the big golf race. Help fund research to find better tests that could help save thousands of lives. That is one hole, one donation at a time. Again, no specific time to do it, but May, June, July, these are the peak times, the long days for taking on this challenge. I think you might be able to manage 72 or more. As mentioned, we'll be giving one of Ian's books to the TCF listener who manages the most. Again, I'm not sure what book it is. We'll give a copy of... Oh, he's raising his eyebrows at me. All right, we'll give a copy of Golf Wars. What was the autobiography? From Leicester with Love or something? I can't remember. Anyway, that's the big golf race for Prostate Cancer UK. To sign up, visit prostatecanceruk.org/chipping. That is prostatecanceruk.org/chipping. And see if you can... better the 100 holes that I'm going to play in my head.
This is Bob McIntyre. You're listening to the Chipping Forecast. Ian's best chance of breaking 90 is to try and left-handed.
Right, just rounding up the other events of the weekend on the LPGA, the JM Eagle LA Championship. JM is the world's largest plastic and PVC pipe manufacturer. Added an unnecessary detail, but Hannah Green won again, the Australian defending her title. It was at the Wilshire in LA, three shots clear of Sweden's Maya Stark. There were 12 different countries on the leaderboard before you got to the first American, which I think is amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
Charlie Hull, the best of the British players, in 13th. But you look at it, Nelly Korda pulled out, didn't she? She was going to go for another one, but then I think fatigue caught up with her. It's a multinational game, especially on the women's side. It seems to be. I look at the LPGA leaderboard most weeks, and it really is.
No, it's brilliant. It's brilliant at the moment. The international flavour to it. Hannah Green is a fantastic golfer, I think. She missed the cut the week before at Chevron, but she's very good on firm conditions. She's, you know, I noted that Jeff Shackelford on his blog was just making the point how she loves the Aussie Sandbelt kind of conditions. And it just makes me wonder that if you're looking for someone other than Nelly Korda, if form is continued when we get to the old course for the AIG Women's Open, that maybe Hannah Green would be someone to consider as a potential winner there.
Yeah. Down in South Africa on the Ladies European Tour, Manon de Roy of Belgium won, England's Gabriella Cowley second. That was the South African Open. So there's a roundup of some of the events of last week. Other news, it's a little bit past now, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it. Further details come out. Jamie Corrigan had the report first in the Telegraph about the loyalty rewards on the PGA Tour. So Ian's looking staggered there. Sorry, did he not have the report first? I thought Jamie Corrigan did.
We all did. We were all at a lunch Guy Kinnings.
PGA Tour.
Loyalty payments.
So Tiger Woods set to receive $100 million equity. This is equity. So this will be paid out over years. So there's an 8-year vesting period. The grants will be worth 50% of their value after 4 years, 75% after six, and the full amount at the end of eight, and they come into different brackets, don't they? Tiger Woods right at the top. Rory McIlroy reported to be getting $50 million. Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth receiving $30 million each. But I don't know. Again, we've talked about it, but the reward for just sitting and not going to live, it's quite something.
Putting aside the money and all of that nonsense, and it's tiring at this point. Strategically, I think it's important because it does enable, I think, the PGA Tour to allow any potential LIV player to come back and play on the PGA Tour, because this removes any sense that the player is going to be feeling aggrieved, because obviously any LIV player coming back isn't going to have access to these funds. So I think it's an important step for the PGA Tour to actually do this. Not saying there's going to be any LIV players that do want to come back anytime soon, but as those contracts roll, it will be interesting to watch that unfold. And as I say, I think this does enable some players to be more accepting of other players coming back potentially.
Mm. This week on the PGA Tour, it is the CJ Cup, the Byron. This is the Byron Nelson, as it was, but it's now the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, CJ. What does CJ do? CJ.
They're a Korean company. Aren't they
are a Korean. Are they a Korean company? Yeah, I've only got CJ. I've just done a search on it. It says letting agents in Hull and the surrounding area, CJ Property. So that's
Reginald Perrin, his boss was
CJ. Yes, he was. Yeah, Reggie Perrin.
No, the only CJ I can think of was from San Andreas, Grand Theft Auto, who was the main character.
Yes, it was. I was looking. Oh yeah,
CJ in the West Wing
as well. Yeah, played by Alison Janney. CJ, lots of different CJs. Maybe they all club together and sponsor this tournament. The Byron Nelson, though, started in 1944. Byron Nelson himself won by 10 shots from Jug McSpaden. Sam Snead won the next year from Jug McSpaden. Jug McSpaden and Byron Nelson, they were both exempt from military service in the Second World War, so they used to put on golf exhibitions together to raise money for the Red Cross and the military effort. So well done to Jug McSpaden and Byron Nelson. But anyway, that's the latest edition. Chris Kim's playing in this week. Sorry, Eddie, what
you mentioned Byron Nelson. It just reminded me we didn't ever talk about the comment that Zane Scotland made on the Sky Sports Golf podcast Masters. He thought Scotty Scheffler was better than, I think, Ben Hogan, Seve Ballesteros and Tom Watson, but not better than Byron Nelson. So that comment certainly drew some ire from us, I know.
It was an interesting one, certainly. I think as he heard that list, Zane, he went, he's better than all those players. He's going, what, Ben Hogan? What are you talking about, Willis? Anyway, Chris Kim, how old's Chris Kim?
Different strokes for different folks.
God. Chris Kim, how old's he now?
He's 16 years old from Surrey, and it's an interesting one, this, isn't it? He's been given a sponsor's invitation by the CJ, and he is the outstanding young male prospect in English golf. 16 years of age, he's starred in the Junior Ryder Cup last year. I've written a story for the BBC Sport website, and now he's got this opportunity as he's studying for his GCSEs to go and play as an amateur on the PGA Tour. So making his PGA Tour debut at the age of 16. What do you think, Eddie?
I think it's great. I saw Miles Russell in America play 2 weeks on the Corn Ferry and do pretty well.
Well, Miles Russell, Chris Kim beat 5-4 in the Junior Ryder Cup.
He's obviously the kiddie, this Chris lad. So, and I know he's playing, I think he's playing the British Masters at the end of the year as well on the DP World Tour. So I think it's great. Yeah, he clearly is going to be a star of the future. So to expose him this early on makes, to me, I think it's a no-brainer. We saw it with Jordan Spieth all those years ago. The really, really great players, that this doesn't faze them. So I think it's a good opportunity for him.
Okay, this is quite dramatic. I'm down to 3% battery, so I'm dragging my... I still haven't got one of those splitters, so I can't have power in and everything else in at the moment. So I think we can make it to the end of the pod here with just 4%. I'm not going to go for the adapter yet. So what is happening? DP World Tour, Volvo China Open. First time it's being held in 5 years. Yeah, 5 years. For all the things that have been going on in the world. And that's at Hidden Grace Golf Club in Shenzhen, which is a very it's a very difficult course. You play a shot, and then Brandon Grace pops up from behind a tree or a bush and shouts stingers or steals your ball or something like that. So that's why it's... You just have to deal with it, don't you? When are you next... I mean, so you've got no fixed plans to play at the moment, Eddie, but when are you next hoping to be playing again?
I think Belgium should be fine. So that's two or 3 weeks away, and yeah,
good.
Should be fine.
All will be well. Get yourself one of these
DIY.
No, I told Eddie to get, because I thought it was this upper back thing again, because I had lots of thoracic spine stuff, but I got this thing from a website, this giant double black ball thing, which you roll out. I roll out on it every day, and haven't had any problems since. And so there we are, good. And Eddie just politely said, thanks for that. That's great. Great advice, Andrew. Thank you. Andrew recommends.
No, it's good advice. Unfortunately for me, my thoracic is all right, but it's
lower back's different, yeah. Different
yeah,
issues.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good. Right. Well, I'd like to be going to play golf today, but I've got the plumber coming round. There's a leak somewhere. The boiler's losing pressure again. Hang on a second. I mean, this is just a couple of months after forking out a fortune, thinking we had it fixed. But now he says he might have to dig up the whole floor to see where the leak might be, so it's not great. Anyway, I'm down to 2%. It's getting sadder, this song.
Sounds like
that.
It.
Anyway, there we are. Right, bye everybody. Take care, and we'll see you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that completes this edition of The Chipping Forecast. Wishing you a safe and pleasant night.
Folding pocket.